morning is Hills, Kashrus, Pesach, and Yom Kippur. There are sheets at the end of the table. There are two sheets. There are a lot of sources here. I don't know that we'll get through all of them. I'd like to. Well, given that we usually plan these to be 45 minutes to an hour, and there are 32 of them, I'm going to guess we won't, but we'll try. We'll see what we can accomplish here. As always, for practical questions, please go to the Mara d'Asra. I'm just trying to provide some of the background on the halachic material. Taking one thing as a given here within the medication discussion, and that is that when we're talking about a pill, we're dealing with a bitter food, something that if you were to try to chew it up and eat it the way we ordinarily chew and eat food, not only would it not be enjoyable, but it's not something that you would ever imagine eating were it not for the medicinal purpose. We will talk a little bit about sweetened medicine, but it's not going to occupy the bulk of what we're looking at. What I'd like to do is first address the question of whether swallowing even counts as eating. When you swallow something whole, is that called eating? Then whether consuming food that we consider to be inedible counts as eating. Because if the food is inedible, is that called eating at all? Then a third, once we've answered the question of whether swallowing is eating, and whether inedible food counts as eating, the question of inedible medicine, where it's specifically consumed for medical purposes, does that count as food? We'll then talk about an additional discussion that comes up halachically, the issue of wrapping up a pill. And there we'll come back to the pill versus capsule discussion as well. And then a couple of side issues that are unique to Pesach and Yom Kippur. So we start with first things first. Does swallowing actually count as eating, or is eating somehow meant to include chewing something up? So the Gemara seems to make it clear that swallowing is indeed eating. There's a Gemara in Ksuvos that talks about liability for eating something one was not supposed to eat, and it says one is liable when the food is in his base hablia, the place where you will swallow in the throat. And Rashi there uses an interesting phrase that's going to come back to haunt us. Hanas grono umeav. He says that there is benefit to one's throat and to one's innards. It's a Gemara Ksuvos Laman Amud Beis 30b. I didn't bring it on the sheet. There are some sources that I left off of this sheet. It's not as though I was just trying to put things on. More clear source, though, than the Ksuvos one is source number one, a Gemara in Yuma. Amar of Shizbi, Amar of Yochanan. Or Shizbi says, Sainu of Yochanan. This is in the category of things you should not try at home. Zar Shabala Shizvin Shel Truma. You have someone who is not a Kohen, who swallows fruit. Shizvin, Shizif in modern Hebrew is a term we use for plum. Rashi uses Old French here and writes Pei Resh Vav Nun Shin, which makes it sound like prunes. It's some kind of a fruit. So you have someone who's not a Kohen, who swallows some kind of fruit that is truma. Therefore, he's not supposed to eat it. But he swallows it whole. Vihikion. And then manages to vomit it out. And somebody else then eats it. Again, do not try this at home. So the question is, who is liable for eating truma inappropriately in this situation? Truma is only supposed to be consumed by a kohen. So Rishon Mishalim Karen Vachomesh. The rule is that the first one to swallow it has to pay for eating truma. Karen Vachomesh means he pays the core amount that he ate plus an extra percentage as a fine for having eaten truma inappropriately. Shani, what about the second one? So he's not responsible for having eaten food, because this is, so to speak, pre-consumed. Shani ein mishalim ela demei etzim larishon bilvad. The second one simply owes a debt to the first. That's its own discussion. The point for us here is that the first one has to pay as though he ate truma, even though he swallowed it whole and did not end up digesting it. That's the key for us. And Rashi explains why in source number two. Rishon Mishalim Karen Vachomesh, the first one, has to pay for having eaten truma. Sha'af hi derech achilasan. Because swallowing is called the manner of eating. That works for stringency. In this case, he's liable for eating something he wasn't supposed to eat. It also works for leniency. Take a look at source number three, please. The Gemara Psachim regarding the Seder. Amar Rava. Rava says, Bala matzah Yatza. If you swallow matzah whole, okay, so let's say you took matzah and you broke it up into little pieces and you had the amount you were supposed to eat, but it was in a shot glass, and then you swallowed it, yatza. You have fulfilled your obligation. There's no obligation to actually chew the matzah. This comes up halachically in discussions for people who can't chew matzah. The question of, can you process it into a form that's more easily swallowed? So he says, bala matzah yatzah. If you swallow the matzah, you have fulfilled your obligation. There's more to this source. We're going to read it now in its entirety because it's going to become relevant later on. Bala maror lo yatzah. If you swallow maror, you do not fulfill your obligation. And that's because, why would that be true? It's supposed to be bitter, right? You're supposed to have some kind of bitterness to it. Bala matza umaror yidei matza yatza yidei maror lo yatza. You swallow them together. You fulfilled your matza obligation, not your maror obligation. Karchan b'siv ublan. If you wrap them up in sieve, sieve is a plant fiber. It grows on the outside of palm trees. So let's say you wrap them up in some kind of fiber, a non-edible substance, and it's a tough substance. The food is never in contact with your throat. So the rule is, af yidei matza nami lo yatza. You haven't fulfilled anything. That's going to come back to haunt us later on. Or not to haunt us, it's going to help us, actually.
Yeah, when you have this sieve, can you taste it at all?
The assumption is no.
That it has absolutely no taste in it.
The assumption is that this is functionally a capsule. The food is entirely encased. You are not getting anything out of it. It has simply gone through your mouth into your stomach. Going back to the beginning of the source, Rava says, you swallow matzah, you fulfill your obligation. And that tells me that swallowing counts as eating. And indeed, that's the point that Rashbam makes in his comment on the Gemara Pesachim in source number 4. Bala matzah, if you swallowed matzah, velola asa, and you didn't chew it, yasa, you fulfilled your obligation. Sharekim ba'erev tochlu matzos, you fulfilled the halacha of, in the evening you shall eat matzah, that's the Torah's wording. Sharei achila hilo, because that's called eating. Umi lechatchila tam matzah, but he says, by the way, we would prefer that you actually taste the matzah. This is not an ideal, this is if you did it, you fulfilled your obligation. Okay, swallowing then does count as eating. One side note, though, that's going to be relevant later in source number 5, a tshuva from the Nose of Yehuda dealing with the issue of swallowing foods that are prohibited to you and eating foods that you're not supposed to eat. The Nose of Yehuda makes an interesting point. He says, "Hari biisurin vaday eno loke ela kederach hanaasan." The rule is that if I eat things that I'm not allowed to eat, I don't get malkos, I don't get lashes, unless I do it in the way that you normally benefit from it. Okay? So I'm not allowed to eat a cheeseburger. If I eat a cheeseburger, I am going to be liable. However, only if, he says, I eat it in the normal manner of benefiting from cheeseburgers. There's a normal way, you have to define normal, but there's a normal way to eat a cheeseburger. That's the only condition under which I will get lashes. Now remember, there are two different grades of liability. There's biblical liability, and then there's rabbinic liability. When he says lashes, what he means is biblical liability. The rule is that biblical prohibitions carry potentially punishment in a Beit Din, including physical punishment, depending on the crime. Whereas rabbinical law does not carry punishment in a Beit Din, unless you have, there's a separate category we call makas mardos. It's not important for us right now. The point is that he says you're only biblically liable if you consume this in the normal way. And yet, he says, and yet we say that if you swallow a prohibited food, you do get lashes. So he says, I don't understand. He says he has difficulty with this idea. And he quotes you a Gemara in Chulin to build his question. I'm jumping to his last words in the source, not because the middle isn't important, but because I want to make sure to get to everything I want to get to. After the exclamation point, in the last line, "Va'oven shepashut etzli," it is clear to me, "Shebliya mikri derech hanaasan," that swallowing is called eating because this is considered to be the normal form of benefit. Okay, so we have said, again, from the Gemara in a few different places, that swallowing counts as swallowing is like eating, and the Noda Yehuda has put an important point on it, saying to us, the reason why swallowing counts as eating is because that's the normal form of benefit. The reason why this will matter is because when we swallow medicine, we don't necessarily call that the normal form of benefiting from the food that you're swallowing. That's why
this is the normal form of benefiting from medicine.
From medicine, correct. So we also have to define benefit a little better also. Excellent. Okay. So we move to our second stage. We've said that swallowing ordinarily counts as eating. Now the question is, what about consuming a food that would normally not be considered edible? So first, we have to talk about two different types of prohibitions. There are some things from which one is not supposed to benefit. There are other items that you're simply not supposed to eat. Okay, the Torah says, for example, there are species of animals that are not kosher. Let's say a pig is not kosher. So for those are called isurei achila. You're not allowed to eat those. I'm allowed to benefit from those. Right? There's a classic episode, I think it was Grey's Anatomy. I got emails about it. I've never seen the show, but I got emails about it where they talked about someone who didn't want to have a pig valve inserted into them, and they said because they were Jewish and all that. And of course, that's nonsense from a halachic perspective because you're allowed to benefit from it. You're just not allowed to eat it. So don't eat the valve. Which probably is a good idea in general. That wasn't medical advice, by the way. There are things that you're not allowed to eat, but you're allowed to benefit from them. There are things, on the other hand, that are isuri hanah, from which you're not supposed to benefit. So, for example, meat and milk mixtures. I'm not allowed to benefit from a meat and milk mixture. So not only am I not allowed to eat a cheeseburger, I'm also not allowed to sell cheeseburgers. Also good advice. So the issue has to be dealt with separately here. The issue of not eating and the issue of not benefiting. If you take a look at source number 6, the Gemara in Pesachim talks about benefiting from things that are isurei hanah, things from which one is not supposed to benefit, in an abnormal way. Mar barav ashi, ashkechel ravina, deshayef la labrate, beguharki da'arla. Mar barav ashi encounters Ravina. Ravina has a young daughter, and she has, as we'll see here in the story, she has a high fever. And he's rubbing her skin with olive oil from guharki. Guharki are underripe olives. Ordinarily, when you use olive oil, apparently you use it from ripe olives. It's only easier to get the oil from them. The guharki are underripe olives. And he's rubbing it on her skin. And these guharki are not just any olives, they are orla olives. The rule is that one is not allowed to benefit from fruit that grows in a tree's first 3 years. Okay, the first 3 years of the tree's growth, the fruit is called arla, it is off limits. How do we count that? When does that start from? All interesting questions, not germane at the moment. The point is that these olives were arla olives. How did Marbar Rav Ashi know, watching Ravina, that these were arla olives? Good question. Nonetheless, he knows that these are arla olives that are in use, and Amarle, he says to him, what are you doing? Emor da'amar Rabbanan b'sha'as ha'sakana. He says, I know the Rabbanan say that if someone is dangerously ill, then you could certainly benefit from arla, because we override everything almost for a person who's dangerously ill. Shalom b'sha'as ha'sakana mi'amor. But who says you're allowed to do this for someone who's not dangerously ill? Amarle, to which Ravina explained, Hai ishta tzmirta nami kshas hasakana damya. He said, I'm a doctor. He says, high fever is considered to be a situation of danger. Therefore, I am justified in using the oil from these olives. That's the first version of the story. But then we get a second version of his answer. Ika de Amri, alternatively, Amarle, he replied, Midi derech hanaka avidna. He says, this is not the way you ordinarily benefit. This is an unusual form of benefit because the olives are not yet ripe. Now, our discussion is not going to fix on the question of olives and normal use of olive oil. That's not our point. Our point is that he says, because I'm benefiting in an abnormal way, it's permissible. That's the key point for our discussion. The fact that the benefit is coming in an abnormal way makes it permissible for the person who is ill. That's abnormal benefit from something from which you're not supposed to benefit. What about foods you're not supposed to eat? Is the rule any different when it comes to eating? So we have two passages of Gemara that demonstrate, apparently, that we are lenient also when it comes to foods that are not to be eaten, not just items that you're not supposed to benefit from. Take a look at source number 7 of Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The Torah says, Lo sochlu kol nevela. You're not allowed to eat a nevela. A nevela is an animal that died through some means other than shechita. Old age, a botched shechting, whatever it was. The rule is that you're not allowed to eat it. The Torah says instead, you know what you should do with it? Give it to the Ger Tosha. If you have somebody in your midst who lives among you and says he's keeping the 7 mitzvos, the 7 Noachide laws, he's simply not he's not obligated in kashrut. So go ahead, give it to him. So the Gemara says, Kol haru'uya lager kriya nevela. She'en ru'uya lager eina kriya nevela. The Gemara says, that which you could give to somebody else to eat, in other words, it's edible food, that's what we call nevela. That's called a nevela such that you're not allowed to eat from it. If it's edible, you're not allowed to eat it. However, she'en ru'uya lager, if it's not suitable for a ger, meaning it's not edible, then ain't a kriya nevela. It's not called a nevela at all. Inedible food is not called food. If you take a look at source number 8, we find a discussion regarding Pesach. Amar Rava, Rava says, Chercho kodem zimano. Let's say there is chametz that I burn before Pesach. And when we say that I burned it, we don't just mean that it got singed. What we mean is that its taste and appearance are entirely altered due to the burning process. So if I have chametz that was burned before Pesach, mutar b'hana, I'm allowed to benefit from it on Pesach, afil la'achar zmano, even after the time when it should have become off-limits. It has to have undergone this before Pesach. That's an important note that we're not going to get into much here. I'm just stipulating it. So I have two passages in the Gemara here that indicate that food that's been in some way rendered inedible is no longer called food. But there's a catch. Look at the wording in source number 8. There's an odd word there, no? What word jumps out at you? Sorry. I mean, that may jump out at you, but that's not the one that jumps out at me. If I were really saying, sorry?
Isn't Zechila?
Yeah. If I was really saying you're allowed to eat burned chametz, then I should have said mutar ba'achila. Right? That you're allowed to eat it. It didn't say that. It said mutar ba'hana, that you're allowed to benefit from it. Why is that? Why did I write? I write. Why did the Gemara write hana instead of achila? So the Ran says, Rabbeinu Nissim, take a look at source number 9. He says, ignore the word behind the curtain. Don't worry about the fact that it says hana. The word hana might as well say achila here. Udamrinan mutar b'hana aso, Rabbeinu Nissim says, the fact that we say you're allowed to benefit from it, bidinhu da'afilu b'achila namishari, the truth of the matter is that as far as the law is concerned, you're also allowed to eat it. Kevin shayatza mitaras pas kodem shayacha bo iser chametz, since it was no longer bread at the time when the prohibition against eating chametz set in. Then why did it say hana benefit? Ela lefi she'ein derech achila b'lechem charuch, since you don't ordinarily eat burned bread, and we don't mean toast here, we mean seriously burned, naka lishna demutar bahana aso. Therefore, use the language of you're allowed to benefit. It's not even called eating. Da'afilu achila, even if you were to actually ingest it, lav achila, you wouldn't call it eating. El demisine mine, we just call it benefit of some kind. So that's why I use the term hana, but the truth of the matter is, says the Ran, food that has become inedible may be eaten, even if it had some kind of prohibition associated with it. I don't care. I am allowed to consume inedible chametz on Pesach. The same rule will apply regarding the nevela, the non-kosher meat that we dealt with in source number 7. That's the position of the Ran, also known as Rabbeinu Nissim. So the Gemara says one thing 2,000 years ago, the Ran comes along and clarifies and explains it another 1,000 years later. The Rosh, roughly contemporary to the Ran, disagrees. He says it's not true. Take a look at source 10. Yesh shirotzim lomar. He says, some people who shall remain nameless desire to say that lav dafka hana, that it's not just benefit that's permitted, but eating would also be permitted. Da'afra be'almahu, because it's just dirt, it's nothing. V'lo mistaber, he says, it doesn't make sense to say that. Ha, Ron, take that. The Abapi, the Baladas HaOchel, Eitzel Kol Adam, granted that the person who chooses to eat it cannot be said to render it food. The fact that he eats it doesn't make it food, because everybody else thinks it's not food. Nonetheless, Mikol Makom, still, Kaman de Iu Ka'achile Aser, since he is eating it, it's Aser to him. He is ingesting it, and that is an act that is prohibited. What does the Rush mean? Yes, bingo. The Rush is invoking, essentially, without using the right words, he's invoking the principle of achshavei. Achshavei, from the root chet shin bet, to think or to consider, means it's a gemara in Shavuos, it's a gemara in Chulin, that one who treats something as food renders it food. Okay, he is machshavin. The Gemara in Shavuos talks about it regarding a person who takes a vow that he's not going to eat certain prohibited things, and then he eats them, but in an inedible form. And the concept in the Gemara there is called eating. He rendered it food. By treating it as food, he ate it, he put ketchup on it or whatever it was, he now considers it to be food. And that seems to be, and the Nishmas Avram writes this and others write this, that seems to be the principle the Rosh is relying on. He's saying, you may say that I'm allowed to benefit from Yisurei Hana, from things we don't ordinarily benefit from, but you're not going to be allowed to eat this food. Benefit, yes. Eating, no. Regarding eating, we invoke the principle of achshavei. Now, that doesn't make this a biblical prohibition. We generally assume, there is one view that's quoted that isn't sure, but generally we assume that it's still only a rabbinic prohibition, because after all, we saw source number 7 that talked about what's called an avela and what's not. And we said, it's not called an avela if it's not suitable for eating. So it's still only going to be considered a rabbinic prohibition. We have more evidence to that. If you take a look at source 11 regarding Yom Kippur. Achal ochlin she'einon ru'uyin.
You're talking about short.
Yeah.
How does the Ran deal with it?
How does the Ran deal with achshavei? Hang on. Take a look at source number 11. So far, the Ran has in his corner source number 7 that says it's not called an avela. But we'll get more. Source 11 in Yuma. Achal ochlin she'einon ru'uyin la'achila. If you eat food that's not suitable for eating. V'shasa mashkin she'einon ru'uyin la'shasiya. You drink beverages that are not suitable for drinking, right? Non-potable beverages. V'shasa tsir omuryas. You drink brine. Okay? Something like that. Potur. You are exempt from liability on Yom Kippur. It says potur. It doesn't say mutar, that you're allowed to. Right? Potur means I'm not biblically liable. Why do I have any liability? Because of achshavei. Because I rendered it food by eating it. But only rabbinically. Only rabbinically is this prohibited. The Rambam rules that way. In fact, in source 12, we won't go see it in depth here, but it's in the laws of Yom Kippur, Hilchos Shmisas Asor, and he says, if you eat foods that are inedible, you drink drinks that are considered inedible, you are pater min hakares. You are exempt from biblical liability, but you get makas mardus, the lashes that the rabbinic court gives you for violating rabbinic law, if you flout rabbinic law. Another source that proves this is source number 13, which we will see inside, because this has relevance for a few things. This is source 13 on Hilchos Ma'achalos Asuros, eating food that's not kosher. The Rambam writes in Halacha Yud, Kala ochlin ha'asurin eino chayav aleihem hachiyochal osan derech hana'a. Foods that are off limits only carry liability if you eat them in the way that people ordinarily benefit from them. Chutz mi basar b'chala v'kilei akarim, except for meat and milk. Kilei akarim is its own discussion, where you're not allowed to benefit at all. Lefish lo ne'amar b'hen achilo, because the Torah never used the term eating. Elahotzi isra achilasin b'lashon acheres b'lashon bishul, the b'lashon hektish. There, the Torah never used the verb "don't eat." The Torah instead said either "don't cook it" in the case of the meat and milk, lo sevashel gediba chalevi mo. It said that the kilei akarim is kodesh, and therefore I can't eat from it. Pentik dash hamalei hazera. Va'afilu shelo kederach hanaya. That teaches me those are a separate case. But ordinarily, he says, I am allowed to benefit, as long as I don't do it in the way of eating. Halacha Yud Aleph, on the flip side, the second side, Ketzad, giving an example of someone who eats something in an abnormal way. Harei shehimcha es hachela v'gam'o. There was fat from an animal, this type of fat that's prohibited for eating. You melted it and swallowed it kishucham while it was hot. Achenich v'grono mimenu, to the point where you actually got scalded from it. Also, don't try this at home. Osha'acha chelev chai. Or you ate it while it was raw. Osha'irev devarim marim. Or you mixed in something bitter. Kigon rosh vilana, like wormwood, something like that. Latoch yayin nesach, into wine that was prohibited. Olatoch kadera shel nevela, or in a pot of food that was not kosher. Va'achalan gashayin marim, and you ate them when they were bitter. Osha'achal ochel ha'asur. Acha she'isriach lehiv ish. Or you ate prohibited food after it had already gone bad. Ubatal me'ochal adam, to the point where it wasn't considered human food. Harezeh potter, you are exempt from liability in all those cases. Again, he used the term potter, which we understand to mean it's a rabbinic prohibition. V'mirev davar mar b'tol kedera shabasa v'chalav v'b'yein kele akerem v'achalav chayev. That's the last point that I'm not going to touch on right now. The upshot of all of this, let's make sure we understand what we're talking about, is that if I consume food that is not edible, the Ran says that is entirely permitted, The Rosh said that is rabbinically prohibited under this principle of achshavei, you ate it, you rendered it food. Clear on that point? Okay, we brought several sources to prove it, so I just want to make sure that we remember where we came from here. That's the basic point, and that's what we follow as halacha. There is an interesting issue that comes up just from an intellectual perspective. It's offered by the Shagas Aryeh in source 14. He floats the idea that there are two different ways to eat inedible food. One way to eat, and even using the term inedible food is not correct, there are two ways to eat food abnormally. One way to eat food abnormally is that you eat food that is inedible. The other way is to eat food that is edible, but in an abnormal way. And he suggests that eating inedible food is more permissible than eating edible food abnormally. You follow that? A little bit of a tongue twister there. Eating inedible food is more permissible than eating edible food in an abnormal way. He points you back to the Ron. It's in source 14 is where he walks you through it, but I'm not going to do it inside. I brought it there for you to see, for anyone who wants to go through it. But basically, this is his argument. The Ron quoted the view that you are allowed to be healed with Isurei Hana, right? With the things that you're not supposed to benefit from. We talk about the olive rubbing case, right? In the Gemara Misachim, he's rubbing the olives on the skin of his daughter. So there we said, even though you're not allowed to eat them, you're allowed to rub them on your skin. And the Ran was saying, since I am allowed to use biblical Isurei Hana'a abnormally, right? I'm allowed to use something that the Torah says don't benefit from it. I'm allowed to use it abnormally, like rubbing the oil from the unripe olives as medication. Therefore, I also may use rabbinic Isurei Hana'a for medication purposes. Okay, that's what the Ran is saying. Since I'm allowed to use the biblical Isurei Hana'a abnormally, if something is only Asur B'Hana'a rabbinically, then I'm allowed to use it for medication. But that may not be extended to eating it, he says. Eating it may not be so. It may not apply to eating it. That's the argument that we may make regarding the Ran. The practical application of that is ingesting inedibles as medication on Yom Kippur. It's enough of a detour that I don't want to go there. Maybe I'll come back to it, to source 14 at the end. I don't want to distract too much from where we're going. It's an interesting argument, but it doesn't have practical relevance. So again, we've said that swallowing counts as eating. That's called a normal form of benefit. We've said that inedible one is allowed biblically to eat foods that are prohibited if the foods are rendered inedible, right? It's only rabbinically prohibited. But now let's go further. The Rosh's statement that when I eat this food, I render it. When I eat this inedible item, I render it food by virtue of my eating it. This idea of achshavei that the Rosh introduces may not apply to pill medication. We're now at the point that I introduced before, saying, even if inedible food, even if consuming inedible food counts as eating, consuming inedible medicine may not count as eating. Because I'm consuming it as medicine. I'm not consuming it as food. And the Shagas Aryeh was strict. He argued whether I eat food or whether I eat medicine, it doesn't make a difference. I consumed it. Regarding eating, the Chachamim were even stricter than regarding benefiting. That's the argument that the Shagas Aryeh makes and says, therefore, even though you're consuming it as medicine, it's still considered to be food. However, there's a whole host of poskim who disagreed with that. Take a look at source 15. The Ksav Sofer, the son of the Chasim Sofer, writing in the early 19th century. He says, Yesh lomar taima da'asru shalo kederach hana'asan v'shalo kederach achilasan mishum da'achshavei. He says, you could say that the reason why they prohibited, right, like that rush that we talked about, the reason why they prohibited eating it even if it's in an unusual way, not the normal manner of benefit, not the normal manner of eating, that the reason why they prohibited it was because of achshave. Because by eating it, you render it food. Hagam araisa batla daito, granted that on a biblical level, what you're thinking doesn't matter, it's not food. Heim asru mishum de achshave, they prohibited it because you have considered it like food by eating it. But that's where you intend to eat it for benefit. Like people who eat something because they enjoy it. Or people who eat something because they're hungry. But if you eat something for medical purposes, and you take something that is specifically bad, something that is bitter, even, to reduce your illness, he says, eating this, and this isn't even called in the manner eating in a manner of non-benefit, you know, to compare it to eating for enjoyment or eating for hunger. This is for medical purposes. And since you didn't really consider it food when you did this, there is no prohibition at all. Not biblical, not rabbinic. Dekal atzmo lo asur rabbanon elam mishum de achshave v'halo achshave. He says the whole rabbinic prohibition is because of achshave. You've rendered it food, and you didn't in this case. What the Ksav Sofer is saying is very important. He's not saying this is a rabbinic prohibition, but we are going to be lenient. He says there's no prohibition at all. None whatsoever. He says eating inedible food only has a prohibition in the sense that by saying I'm eating this for my hunger, I'm eating it because I enjoy it, you're rendering it food, and that rabbinic prohibition does not exist if you're only consuming it for medical purposes. There's no reason, therefore, according to the Ksav Sofer, to even look for another way to do things. Right? Let's say I'm a patient on Yom Kippur, and I know that let's say I'm dealing with some kind of a health condition. I don't want to start specifying because I can get into trouble. But I'm dealing with some kind of a health condition for which I need to take a pill, and the pill is inedible, right? And I'm only taking it for medical purposes. If I ask Ksav Sofer, should I try to push myself so that I won't end up taking this pill on Yom Kippur? His answer is no. It's not eating. It's nothing. It's not that we're being lenient for you. You didn't do anything wrong. It's like breathing. That's the way the Ksav Sofer will look at it. Yes, question here?
Is he talking about Nevela or Meat and Milk, or doesn't even matter?
Doesn't matter. It would appear not to matter, because he mentions Shloka Derech Hana'asan as well. He doesn't just mention Shloka Derech Hachilasan. Yes?
Take a sip of water with it to swallow.
We're going to talk about water at the end. We'll get there, God willing. A second approach is brought by the Yad Avram. The Yad Avram's argument is a more logical argument than the Ksav Sofer. The Ksav Sofer's argument is not even a logic one. It's simply saying, achshave applies when you eat it as food, and this isn't even under that. The Yad Avram, his argument is similar. He says the fact that you are ill shows that you are not eating it as food, but he brings very solid sources to base it on. He doesn't just say, this is my argument. Take a look at source 16. Sheretz Saruf. If a person has a creepy, crawly creature that's been burned, doctor says to him, listen, I know you used the penicillin and things like that, but today, gecko. The burnt gecko is your... like they had the witch doctor before the World Cup started, right? They had some kind of a potion that they made for the South African team to succeed. I heard about it on the radio. So if you eat a sheretz saruf, he says mutar la'achlo mishum refuah. You're allowed to eat it for medicinal purposes. Da'afra ba'amu, because it's just it's dust. It's nothing. And take a look at source 17 in the Shulchan Aruch. Bishar isur misrapim b'mekom sakana, with other items that are prohibited. Other meaning as opposed to the ones he mentioned preceded before that. Misrapin, you're allowed to heal yourself. Makam sakana, if you're in danger. Afilu derech hana'asan, even to do it normally, to consume these things normally if you're in danger. That's not our case. We're not dealing with a person who's dangerously ill. Vishaloba makam sakana, if it's not a dangerous situation, kederech hana'asan, asur shalo kederech hana'asan mutar. You're not allowed to benefit in the normal manner of benefit. You are allowed to benefit in an unusual way. I'm jumping his reference to Kiliat Karim and Basa B'Cholav, not important for us right now. I'm going to the third line in Source 17, Haggad, the Ramah. Yesh omrim dechol isure hana'a midirabanan muser mutterli hisrapos bahen afilu chol ha'shein bo sakana. He quotes the view of the Ran, who said that some say you are allowed to use isure hana'a. You're allowed to use these items from which one is not supposed to benefit, right? Even if there is no danger involved. And then he says, Mutter Lisrof Sheretz, O Shard Bar Yisr, you can burn a lizard or some other creepy crawly, whatever, some other prohibited item, and eat it, Lurafua, for medical purposes. Afilu Chola Sheim Bosakana, even if you are not dangerously ill, Chosi Ba'atzeo Veros Kochavim, except for using wood from idolatry, that's its own discussion. The point is that the statement that the Yad Avram makes, drawing on the Shulchan Aruch, is if you're doing it for medicine, it doesn't count as food. The Chazon Ish brings this up as well. The Chazon Ish, writing only about 60, 70 years ago, wrote in Source 18. He says, he offers a new angle on this regarding Pesach. V'af l'may demashma me'achronim zal d'lecho l'chatchila osur, afilu chameit shenifsal me'achilas kelev, even according to the view that you're not allowed to eat, ideally you're not allowed to eat chameit that is not edible, okay, that one shouldn't, ideally one should not be eating that. Mikol makom al yedei ta'arobos sha'ar devarim. However, if other items are mixed in to the food, I added in brackets, vein daito ala chametz, and your goal is not to eat the chametz at all, but to eat the other items, mutter, it's permissible, to lo shayach kan achshavei de daito al hasamim. It's permitted because it's not called achshavei. Your mind is on the medicine. And what he's talking about here, I should have prefaced it before he read the Chazon Ish, that would have made it more clear. The Chazon Ish is introducing an entirely different angle. The argument of achshavei is, you intended to eat X, therefore you consider it food. However, generally speaking, the chametz that's in a pill is not the medicine. The chametz that's in the pill is the base, right? That's generally speaking. And I read an article that showed different ways in which chametz could come into it. But basically, your goal is not to eat the base at all. Your goal is to eat the medicine. If there was some vehicle for which you could get the medicine without the chametz, you'd be very happy. So he says that's not achshavei. Even if you say eating for medicinal purposes counts as rendering it food, that's only about the item that you wanted to eat. You don't want to eat the chametz. So therefore he argued that a chametz pill on Pesach is mutter, even according to those who say that eating something for medicinal purposes counts as eating. You follow? It's a different argument.
You might run into trouble with the children's liquid stuff.
Yes. There are cases where the chametz actually is the medicine. Well, the children's liquids, you have another issue also, and that's the sweetening that's involved. You're about the sweetening.
But using water to help swallow the pill might fall into that category, right?
Because your goal is not the water.
Right.
It's an interesting thought. We're going to come back to the water, but it's an interesting idea. The Nishmas Avram, Avram Sofer Avraham, sees support for the leniency in the Rambam himself, in an apparent contradiction in the Rambam. If you take a look at Source 19, in the laws of Chametz U'Matzah, regarding Pesach, the Rambam writes, Davash Nisariv Bo Chametz, Ve'eno Maichol Adam Klal. If you have a food that has Chametz mixed in, but it's not a food, you have something that has Chametz mixed in, and it's not edible to people at all. O She'eno Maichol Kol Adam, or it's something that not everybody would eat. Then he gives you an example of something called triak. Okay, Yotzebo. The Ava Pisha Mutter Lekaimo, granted you're allowed to keep it on Pesach because it's not edible. Asur Lochlo Ad Achra Pesach, you're not allowed to eat it until after Pesach. Even though it's not edible, I am not allowed to eat it. So says the Rambam there. Now jump to Source 20, where the Rambam says, when is this true that we say you are only allowed to heal yourself with prohibited items if you're dangerously ill? When do we limit the permission to heal to only dangerous situations? If you're eating in the normal manner of benefit, like they're feeding him non-kosher creepy crawlies, they're giving him food on Yom Kippur, that's when we say only if you're dangerous ill. But to do it in an abnormal way, Kagon Shaosin La Ritia or Malugma Mechameso, my Orlo, Shamashkinos, and the Varm Sheishba and Marmahura Vimisuri Machol, so they give him something you're not supposed to benefit from, but they do it as a plaster on his skin. Or they give him something bitter to drink. Right? The Rambam says, Harezim Mutter. That's permitted, Rafilu Shlova Makom Sakana, even if you're not dangerously ill. So again, the Rambam tells me in the laws of Pesach that I'm not allowed to eat inedible chametz. Right? That was in source 19. The Rambam said, I'm not allowed to eat inedible chametz. But in source number 20, he said, I am perfectly allowed to heal myself by using medicine that's prohibited to me as long as it's in an inedible form. You see the apparent contradiction? So what's the answer?
What we've been talking about, in other words, when it's medicine, it takes it out of the status.
Right. Source 19 wasn't a medical situation. The Radvaz has another approach to this apparent contradiction, but the Nishmas Avram, Rav Avram Sofer Avram, says it's obvious. The case in Source 19 was not a medical case. The Rabbi never mentioned healing. Yes, I'm not allowed to eat inedible chametz on Pesach. That's true. However, if I'm doing it for healing, that's source number 20. And that's where the Rambam permits it. So he says that shows, even the Rambam himself, aside from these latter-day authorities, the Ksav Sofer, Yad Avram, Chazonish, the Rambam himself saw a distinction. And so, again, to put this back into the overall framework, it's true that swallowing is called eating. However, pills are bitter, and therefore they are not fit for eating. Granted that, there is a view that says, the Rosh says, I'm still not allowed to eat foods that are inedible. When it comes to eating them for medical purposes, that argument falls apart. Either because I'm not eating it as food, I'm eating it as medicine, or because I don't even want the chametz part in the chametz case. It will still apply in the case of non-kosher food. And that can be based on the Rambam. Sorry, what about Bayera, Bayimatza? It's inedible. The Rambam just told you in Hilchos Chametz Umatza that having nothing to do with medicine,
it's not really allowed to kill it.
It's correct. I can keep it around. No problems. Now, there's an additional reason for leniency as well. And that's the fact that pills are never chewed. Remember the point that we made back in the beginning where we said that swallowing is called eating because there is benefit to the throat because it's the normal form of eating. But here, this is not the normal form of eating. Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach made this point in Source 21. It's the Shmir Shabbat Kehilchasa quoting Rosh Shlomo Zalman. He says, "V'shamati me'agon Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach shlita da'af shegam b'li achashiv kederach achila." Granted that swallowing is called the manner of eating, and he quotes the Gemara in Chulin, "Kemavur b'sof haragid anasha." Mikomakom, nonetheless, b'kiyai gavna. In this case, v'lo chazi lilos. It's a pill. It's not suitable for chewing. You're not supposed to chew pills. We have two categories. We have chewables and we have pills. The fact that we don't call a pill a chewable tells you it's not meant for chewing. So this is not suitable for chewing. Ulochlo kedarko, and you couldn't eat it normally. El omid rak leblia. It's only meant for swallowing. And he says kimochametz nuksha shel trufos. Omid rak leblia l'shem refuah. Like he says, we have a medicine that's made out of inedible chametz that you can only swallow. Yitachei nechashiv kepaka mimenu shem ochel. It could be. You could argue it's no longer called food at all. V'kevin shegam ein roy lechamei abo isos acheros efshur demuter lebolo. Since it's not even like a sourdough, where you could, you know, use that to make other dough rise, this is nothing. This is garnished. And therefore, he says, that's another reason for leniency. Rav Yoezer Ariel contended the same thing in an article in Tchumen, arguing that there is no benefit to the throat. We said way back when, in source number 2, that the reason swallowing is called eating is because that's derech achilasan. That's the way in which you eat. That was the reason. In source 4, we said regarding swallowing matzah, shavei achila hilo, that is considered to be eating for him. That's true in those cases, but not where you're talking about something that is entirely inedible. Right, those who don't like matzah still don't have the right to call matzah inedible. That's not what we're talking about here. When you're dealing with something inedible, we are not going to consider it eating when you swallow it. And there is proof to this from source number 22, where the Gemara in Shabbos, we're on the third side now. The Gemara in Shabbos is talking about how you can violate the Torah accidentally, without intent. So they within the view that Abaye, one of the Chachamim there, presents, they want to know, can you give me a case in which a person violates the Torah accidentally without intent? And his answer is, Tesavu Rokhu Ublao. If there's something that is forbidden, it's forbidden fat, and he thinks that it is saliva, okay, it's in his mouth, he thinks it's saliva, and he swallows it, not knowing that it's in fact this forbidden food. So Rashi there says in source 23, Kasava Roku, he thinks it's saliva, Shahaya Chela of Nimoach, it was fat that was melted, Ubalo, and he swallowed it, Delo Ichabe Lachila, he didn't mean to eat at all. Durok Lav Barachila Havu, Ela Blia, he says saliva is not ordinarily eaten at all. It's called swallowing. So what Rashi says there is, this is the key, what Rashi says there is that swallowing saliva is not even called eating. Even though we've said that swallowing is eating, swallowing saliva is not eating. Why? Because no one eats saliva. It's just there in your mouth. That's not called eating. I heard once about a stringency that some had in Europe that they wouldn't swallow on Yom Kippur. They wouldn't even swallow like saliva on Yom Kippur. I don't understand how that actually works. But the other than spittoons, but I that wasn't really the question.
What is the Shemir Shabbos on source 21?
Yeah.
What's the context? Richard swallow and what? I
mean, medicine. He's in a pill medicine discussion.
Right, but he's talking about what? Shabbos, Yom Kippur?
Oh, that's actually Perek Mem, I think, was Yom Kippur.
But he's specifically Yom Kippur.
Yes. But the comment that Rashi is making here in source 23 is that swallowing saliva is not called swallowing and eating. And perhaps, says Rav Ariel, you could say the same thing here. Pills are never chewed, and therefore it's not called eating. So, our grounds for leniency now. Number one, that the pill is inedible, right? That's number one. Number two, even if you say that eating inedible food counts as rendering it food, that may not apply when you're doing it as medicine. Number three, your intent may not even be to eat the usher part. Your intent may be the medicine, which may not be the usher part at all. And now number four, you're swallowing it, and swallowing inedible food may not be called eating. Yes?
Can we really apply saliva to that? I mean, saliva is something that's, you know, created in the mouth, you're not putting it in. It's kind of like, you know, if there's a cut on the inside of your mouth, you're allowed to swallow the blood. But if you have a cut on your arm, you're not allowed to suck the wound, right?
Right, that's true. If the argument for permitting the saliva was
based on
the fact that it's internal to your mouth, then I would say, yes, you can't make an analogy from that to medicine. But his argument is that it's not called eating at all, that saliva is not called a food. However, one basis to support you is the fact that you need to quote a pasuk in Eov to show that it's not called eating. I don't have a pasuk from Eov about medicine.
But is swallowing your own blood when it's a cut in your mouth, is that also considered eating? I mean,
no.
If it's, I don't think so then.
But for a different reason. I don't think that it's because of that. And the argument that you can't make the analogy from saliva to the pill, I think, is a solid argument.
Right, because that's the external that's going in. The
right.
Other ones.
Right. I wouldn't use the blood thing as a reason, but yeah. There's also a whole other discussion, which we're not going to do today, regarding what we call chatzi shiur, the issue that you're eating less than the usual threshold amount for a prohibition. There's an additional element here. Even if the Rush's prohibition applies, and you say eating the food, eating the pill counts as eating and achshave and all of that, there is another approach, and that is that of wrapping the medicine in something else. This is useful for three purposes. And this is where the capsule versus pill argument comes into play. Number one, if you accept the possibility that eating the pill makes it food, that's number one. It's also relevant, though, for two other possibilities. Let's say you have somebody who is ill in the sense that they're feeling discomfort, but they don't even rank as chola she'en bo sakana. Right? In other words, we've talked about in the past, you still have to have a certain degree of illness to qualify as somebody who is ill but not dangerously ill. Let's say someone has a minor headache, they can make it through the day. They just have a headache. So they won't necessarily rank at that level where we'll say, go ahead and take medicine. Or, third possibility, what about the case that Laser mentioned? What if the medicine actually is edible? Now what do I do? You've gotten rid of all the inedible medicine arguments. So this is where wrapping the item comes into play. For Pesach purposes, if the capsule itself is not a chametz material, a capsule is essentially wrapped food. Right? If the chametz is inside the capsule, your capsule is wrapped food. For Yom Kippur, that won't help you, because the capsule is part of the food itself. So the Gemara in Pesachim that we saw back in source number 3 said that if I swallow matzah and maror while they are wrapped in fiber, in some kind of an inedible plant fiber, the rule is I did not fulfill matzah and maror. Right? I have not fulfilled my obligation because it's not called eating. Well, that works against me for Pesach purposes. However, it's going to help me regarding medicine. Take a look at source 25, Rashbam. He says, Karchan, you wrapped them. Shnei and Yachad Besiv, Hagadel Saviv Adekel. You wrapped the matzah and the maror together in fiber that grows around a palm tree. Lo Yatza, you didn't fulfill your obligation. Sharei Lohaya Mamash Befiv, because it was not really in your mouth. Lo Zev Loze, not the matzah, not the maror. Ukizorek Evan Lachemes Dami, it is like you are throwing a stone into a pitcher. Where does that phrase ring from? Not the old Aesop's fable with the crow. There's another, yeah? Where does this come from? Source 26. Well, there's Vayechla Mayim Menachemes by Hagar and Yishmael. That's true. But no, take a look at source 26. The Gemara in Shabbos uses this phrase. It's regarding eating also, but it's regarding eating schedules. And it talks about when different people, different trades, eat during the day. And the Gemara there says that if you don't eat your first meal until after midday, then you're not going to enjoy the food you eat afterwards. It concludes by saying, Mikan ve'elech kezorek evan lachemes. After that, if you don't eat breakfast until after the middle of the day, it's like throwing a stone into a pitcher. Right? That's one of the reasons why on Shabbos one isn't supposed to go until to go hungry past midday. So that's what he's saying here in our discussion. You won't benefit at all from eating this food. It's like throwing a stone into a pitcher. It happens to be it passed through your throat on the way into your stomach, but you received no benefit from it. That's the key. And based on that idea, the Mishnah Lamelech writes in source 27, writing on the Rambam, I'm just going to synopsize what he says, but you can see it there in source 27. He says, one who eats a prohibited food in a wrapped form is not violating a biblical prohibition. Rabbinic maybe, but not violating a biblical prohibition. So now can we apply this to food? So Chaim Odzer in source 28 discusses this in terms of the principle of achshavei, talking about food that's not edible. And he says if food that's inside a wrapper is not itself edible, then no one is going to say that when you swallow it in a pill and in a capsule, it becomes achshavei. It becomes food. It's not true. Because you ate it wrapped. You didn't get any benefit. It's not called eating. It's not called anything. And Shlomo Zalman Auerbach relied on this regarding Yom Kippur in an edible medicine case. Source 29. He says, "Im tam hagilula eino mar." If the taste of a pill is not bitter, yesh la'otfa b'niyar dak ulebola kashi atufa. You should take some kind of a thin paper, wrap it up, and then and swallow it in its wrapped form. That's the position of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and the Shmir Shabbos Gehilchasa. So if you have to take an edible medicine, that's your way to do it. Now, that's not going to help you with a liquid, obviously, but it'll help you with a solid. Now, regarding Pesach, there are additional reasons to be lenient. The Nishmas Avram points out that we don't actually know that there is chametz in the pill, unless you've investigated and found that there specifically is. It's not as though most pills contain chametz or something that grew on chametz or something along those lines. That's another reason for leniency. The Tzitz Eliezer and Rav Avadia Yosef... Did we find that they are grown?
Ask the pharmacist.
Yeah, they are grown on it?
A lot of them have got starch in it.
Okay. The, sorry?
Starch
true.
Yeah. Okay. There's an article in Asya which I can provide for people. I don't think it's available online, where it gives you practical information on what kinds of medicine have greater concerns for chametz and which ones don't. But I'm very comfortable in any case. Even if you'll tell me that all medicines have it, I'm very comfortable with what we've seen so far in terms of permitting it. The Tzitz Eliezer and Rav Avadia Yosef do suggest that one should look for non-chametz options if you can, but that seems to be a chumrah rather than a halacha. That seems to be because we don't like having people flaunt Pesach or flout Pesach. The
same would be true for gel caps, presumably.
Yes. Yes, the same thing would be true regarding gel caps. You mean in terms of looking for other options?
Yeah.
Yes, presumably yes. But again, there's so much room here to argue, number one, that it's not achshavei, because you're doing it for medical purposes. And number two, that even if it is, number one, that it's not food. Number two, even if you'll say that achshavei can render something food, you're consuming it for the medical purpose. And number three, the Chazanish's argument, I'm not consuming it because I want the gelatin, I'm consuming it because I want the medicine. That really, I shouldn't really need to go hunting for the non-gelatin option.
Also, wait, but if you have like a gel cap, then that means it'd be in a capsule, because unless you're going to actually like...
No, because the capsule is the gelatin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry?
It seems like this, that you'd even be able to eat like some sort of vitamin or something, like a non-chewable vitamin that has some sort of starch base in it on Pesach if you swallow it.
Right, so that's a really, really good question. The vitamin, the question of whether vitamins qualify as medication. In a standard situation... let me not go there. I'm not going to go there because it opens up too large a can of worms for this. It's a good question, though. Well, that's the question.
It's inedible and you're swallowing it.
Right.
Anyway,
so. I wanted to get to just two quick Yom Kippur issues to wrap up, so to speak. One, the standard for Yom Kippur, is what we call Yishuv Hadas, having a settled mind. It's not quite the same as the standard for other yamim, for other laws. In other words, when it comes to food, is it kosher, is it non-kosher? Right? The standard is, eat it, don't eat it. Yom Kippur, the standard is v'inisem es nafsho sechem, that a person should make himself be oppressed, however we want to do that translation. Feel free. But the point is not necessarily eating. The point is that a person should not have a settled mind. And that leads to two opposite effects on the law. On the one hand, it may make bitter medicine more acceptable, even, than it is for Pesach. Because you don't get Yishuv Hadas, you don't get a settled mind, out of eating something that's bitter. The Tur has an apparent contradiction in his comments. If you take a look at source number 30, the Tur writes, quotes the Avi HaEzri saying, if you eat food on Yom Kippur, if you eat food that was not edible, Kasav Avi HaEzri dafilu isura leka, the Avi HaEzri, who is a Rishon, going back 1,000 years, says that you haven't violated anything if you ate inedible food. However, when it comes to Pesach, the Torah follows his father, the Rosh, who said that when it comes to eating singed chametz, you're not supposed to do that on Pesach, because achshavei and all of that. So how do I resolve what he writes on Pesach, where he says don't eat it, with what he writes on Yom Kippur saying you may eat it? Shagas Aryeh points out the problem. Rav Ariel argues in the article in Tchumen that I mentioned before, that it's because Yom Kippur is about Yishuv Hadas, it's about having a settled mind, which you don't get from eating inedible food. So that's why he's
moving. What do you mean by settled?
The idea is that the concept of prohibiting eating in general could be understood as mechanical. Don't engage in the physical act that brings food into you. However, when it comes to Yom Kippur, the Torah never says don't eat on Yom Kippur. Actually, that's not true. But the Torah's main phrase is v'inisem es nafsho sechem, you shall oppress yourselves. So if I'm eating inedible food, that doesn't break the oppression of Yom Kippur. That's the idea.
But if it makes you feel better, then it does.
Because it's making you feel better medicinally.
Yeah.
But not as food. That's as medicine. The Gemara in Yuma talks about...
But you're going by the opinion that it's not... We're looking at the ikar of eating. We're looking at the ikar of v'initim nafsho sechem. Then by that token, then it's exactly the opposite of v'initim nafsho sechem. By taking this medicine, I'm making myself feel more comfortable.
Right.
I'm less afraid that I'm going to feel ill today. I'm less afraid that I'm going to be uncomfortable today.
Right. So it's a good thought, but it doesn't quite work that way. Because when you're dealing with Yom Kippur, there is a discussion in the Gemara in Yuma about taking on extra actions which will make you feel worse. Should I sit in the sun at Dafka on Yom Kippur so that I'll feel worse and things like that? And the conclusion there is no. I don't take on additional acts that are going
this
to... I'm not supposed to take on additional... I don't take on additional acts that are going to make me feel worse on Yom Kippur. Right. The relief that I'm getting from the pill on Yom Kippur is not coming from the fact that it's food. It's coming from the fact that it has a medicinal effect on me. The medicinal effect that alleviates my pain would be under one of those extra acts. It's not in the five that I generally classify as Inui. That's why it doesn't apply. But this idea of Yishuv Hadas, not pursuing a settled mind, makes sweetened medicine less acceptable on Yom Kippur than it is on Pesach. Right? The Ksav Sofer says it's going to be ushered to me on Yom Kippur. Pesach, I'll be okay. But if the standard is Yishuv Hadas, having a settled mind, then maybe sweetened medicine is worse on Yom Kippur. There's a whole discussion about what qualifies as sweetened medicine. Is it where the medicine itself is sweetened or whether the medicine is taken with a sweetener? It's a great discussion, but not for right now. Last point, the issue of drinking water to help get the pills down. I knew this was an issue. So I'm jumping to the conclusion on this rather than go through the entire discussion. But basically, the advice of the poskim is to either train yourself before Yom Kippur to dry swallow a pill, or in a case of need, to take water and make it bitter. Add a little bit of some kind of an edible dish soap or something like that to the water, just a little bit of it. Enough so that it's not going to be edible. And using only, sorry.
Give me diarrhea, don't do that.
Okay. That wasn't practical advice. The point is specifically to make it something bitter.
If you grind up a bit of the pill into the water, that would probably make it pretty bitter.
Potentially, yes. I don't know if that'll change the effectiveness of the pill, though. Sorry?
Take a different pill, grind it in.
Just a little bit much.
Talk to your pharmacist. But using only a minimal amount of water and using water that is itself less potable, is a good way to deal with the problem. There is an argument that some offer, a very, very interesting argument, that filtered water counts as pugum, counts as having a flawed taste. Someone argue that having filtered water is better than if you have to take a pill, use a minimal amount of water and use filtered water. But if you can get some kind of water that has a bad taste to it, that would be good. Distilled water, right? I'm sorry, distilled water was it, not filtered. Thank you. So again, to summarize what we have. Number one, we ask whether swallowing counts as eating. Folks, I just need 1 minute for the summary. We ask whether swallowing counts as eating, and the answer is yes, because you are considered to benefit. We said that consuming inedible food may count as eating because of the view of the Rosh that you are rendering it as food, and it does seem to be accepted that rabbinically consuming inedible food counts as eating. However, if it's inedible medicine, then that may not be called an act that renders it food, number one. Number two, your goal may not be for the prohibition. Your goal is for the medicine itself, and the medicine itself may not be the prohibited element like the starch base on Pesach. Number three, pills are never chewed, and therefore that's an act of swallowing, which may not be considered the equivalent of eating. And then finally, regarding Pesach, you could consider the capsule wrapped chametz, and therefore that would be another reason to be lenient. The capsule won't help you regarding Yom Kippur. If you wanted to use the wrapping element, you'd have to wrap the capsule itself in something else in order to take advantage of that approach. So if you have an inedible pill, it sounds like you're basically permitted for Pesach and for Yom Kippur, or for that matter, a pill that was from some material that was not kosher, assuming it's inedible. If it is edible, then it sounds like from this, your best option is to, if you must, rely on that, on the argument of the Chazon Ish and others, if it is edible, your best bet is to rely on the wrapping idea, whether it's wrapped inside the capsule for Pesach purposes or whether it's with an additional layer of wrapping. That seems to be the best option to go on. One who cannot wrap it for whatever reason does seem to have basis in any case based on the things that we've said. But as always, please make sure to ask your Rav. Thank you very much. And we'll try for a Sunday in July. Laser will send out the email, God willing, to let you know exactly when.